recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Arn. And of course, we couldn't do it without the Hall of Famer himself, the founder of the Four Horsemen, the creator of the Spine Buster. He is Double A. He is the enforcer. He's Arn Anderson. Arn, how are you, man?
You could do it without me, but it wouldn't be the same.
I agree. It would not be the same, but I'm excited that we're here to talk about today's episode. April of 1987 is where we are. A lot of big moving parts. We're on the heels of the biggest WrestleMania ever. Dennis Condrey's just hightailed it out of town. Lex Luger is a horseman. Ole Anderson is out. Lots of moving parts. But before we get into all that, I want to talk about what happened last weekend. Of course, everybody's listening to this on a Saturday, but last Saturday you found yourself there for a pretty big happening. Both yourself and your son Brock were in Spartanburg for Big Time Wrestling. But something pretty special happened that night. Tell us about it. FTR and the Rock and Roll Express.
I mean, come on. Generational at its finest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Generational.
Yeah, I mean, I looked around the room and there's, you know, Matt Hardy, there's Scotty Too Hotty, there's FTR. You know, I'm knowing that Rock and Roll Express is roaming around somewhere. Brock, Lodi, you know, the card was loaded. Jerry Lawler was there, but it's been a long time since I've seen four guys that far apart in age, and I'm talking FTR and Rock and Roll Express, so excited to work together, and they really were. Ricky Morton looked me right dead in the eye. I don't know if he was telling an industrial strength whopper or what, but he said he lost 16 pounds last couple weeks getting in shape for that match.
Wow.
Pretty impressive. That's a hell of a compliment. And Brock being on the card, that was his first really live single match, you know, in front of a crowd like that. And so proud of him. He did a really, really good job. And everyone was there. You know, all the fans that were there were so kind and so receptive to him. And it was just a good day. It was a very good day.
It's really remarkable, too, when you think about, you know, all the history that the Rock and Roll Express have in the Carolinas and how much FTR respects both the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express and their style of wrestling, and that they got to have that match in the Carolinas. And it just so happens that Arn Anderson's there, not by himself, but with his son. And it just so happens that Matt Hardy, another tag team specialist, is there. Oh, and how about one of his most iconic opponents who doesn't live too far up the road? Edge is there to take in this really historic moment for a very special independent show.
Yeah. You know, walking around saying hello to everybody in the locker room, you know, I hear this, well, what's up, Grizzled? And I look over, that was my nickname for him, Grizzled Veteran. And there he was. Hadn't seen him since I left. Edge, you know, looked great. Got a nice message from Beth. I'm very fond of Beth. She was one of my favorites. She's a beast, his wife, and their family's all doing well, and he's doing well. It was great to see him there.
So cool to see the legends show up to pay respect to some other legends, Rock and Roll Express, and some future legends, FTR. Just think the world of those guys, and I'm jealous I wasn't able to be there, but I am here today. And we're going to be talking about what's going on. Golly, it's hard to believe this is a real sentence. 35 years ago, April of 1987, you actually start off on April Fool's Day doing a little championship wrestling from Florida. Second from the top, a singles match with yourself and Ole Anderson. Ole's going to get the win by DQ. What do you remember about working, you know, in Sunrise, Florida for championship wrestling from Florida? And now you're coming face to face with Ole after these really, really hot promos that you guys have had back and forth. What can you tell us about this?
Well, it must have been April Fool's Day, right? My, that's April Fool's Day when you walk in the building and find out you're fighting Ole Anderson, and he's pissed. So you're already at two disadvantages as it is. No, it was, you know, things were starting to heat up. The promos that he did had pretty much just paved the way for this was going to be a very personal angle, and it was, and it just made for a hell of a fight. That I can remember for sure.
2 days later, you're in Greensboro, North Carolina at the Coliseum, and you guys are going to be filming a special called NWA Super Bounce. It'll ultimately air on May 23rd. It's Ole and yourself with JJ in your corner. Once again, it's a DQ, this time around the 4 minute mark, when JJ interferes because Ole has you in the standing armbar, which of course Ole has finished countless victims with that maneuver on television at this point. And after the bout, Ole clears from the two of you, and you're going to come back bloody, and there's going to be another brawl with Ole. It's a pretty hot issue here. You and Ole, is this the most heated rivalry or I hate to even use the term, but a blood feud as you've had in wrestling thus far in your career?
That type of just brawl, probably the first of that magnitude, you know, with that kind of angle behind it and that kind of story behind it. And just, you know, it wasn't a technical match by any stretch. It was just a bar fight.
Right.
I would say for sure, that's a good call. Probably the roughest one of my career up to that point.
Really a hot issue, as we heard with all the promos, and we're going to pick that up on April 4th, the very next day. So after you do the show in Greensboro at the Coliseum, really the spiritual home, if you will, of Jim Crockett Promotions here in North Carolina, Greensboro is the home of Starrcade, but we're scooting down to Atlanta, and that's where all the magic happened that we all enjoyed as fans. On this show, we're going to see you pin Alan Martin with a gourd buster in just about 2 minutes. And then we're going to hear some promos. And I think we actually have some of those now. I think what we're going to be playing next is a Saturday night clip where there's an Ole Anderson bit and Tim Horner's involved. And then we're going to hear from Arn Anderson and Kevin Sullivan. Let's play that clip now. This is from April 4th, 1987.
Once again, fans, right on the arm. The winner of the match, The Rock, Ole Anderson. And we'll be right back after this short break. Second hour of World Championship Wrestling, and Ole Anderson with a great win. And here's White Lightning Tim Horner with him.
You know, Tony, I've had people come up to me every day this week, and they say, Tim, why are you taking Ole's side? Why are you helping? Well, it's plain and simple, because we believe in the same thing. It's family. And anybody who has their priorities straight, Tony, has to be family first. Now, the Horseman, you figure you're just going to push Ole on the side and he's going to bow out gracefully. Well, you're wrong, because Ole don't bow out to nobody. And I tell you what, I told Ole, and I'll tell you people, anytime he needs me, I'll be there. I don't have a reputation of being a wrecking crew, but I guarantee you when it comes time to fight, wrestle, or maybe swing that ball bat, I'll be right there.
Okay, let's bring in Ole Anderson.
You know what? I got a couple of tough matches coming up. One, of course, is Big Bubba. Big as you are, I got an equalizer called a baseball bat, a Louisville slugger. And Bubba, when I get in that ring, we're going to be right there to hit a home run with you. And the guy that I really can't wait to see is that little snot nose that was out here a little while ago. And I'm talking about the guy that everybody that I see says they want to see his backside whip. And I'm talking about you, Tully Blanchard, television champion. You can't wait to get a hold of me. Well, what's going to happen when I get in that ring with this Louisville slugger? I got Timmy Horner over here watching the rest of those horsemen. I got this Louisville slugger just in case J.J. Dillon steps his blonde-haired face in the ring. And Tully, I'm going to go out there and do something to you that your dad should have done a long time ago. You think I'm joking? I guarantee you, when I get done, everybody in that Omni, tomorrow night, watch it, mark it down, don't forget. Bring mom and pop, bring everybody, because I'm going to guarantee everybody in the building that I'm going to make Tully Blanchard bleed. And when I do, I'm going to bend him over so his backside's showing just a little bit. And then I'm going to slap him a few just to let him know who the boss is.
All right, let's go back to the ring.
The Four Horsemen rule wrestling. And this is another reason why. Double A Arn Anderson with the gourd buster right into the mat. Your winner, Arn Anderson. been a win for Lex Luger, for Arn Anderson, for Tully Blanchard. All winners here today on TV.
Well, obviously, AA is really geared for the cup. He's got a very able partner, hand-picked by yours truly. And, of course, I'm talking about Kevin Sullivan, and they're going to set Baltimore on fire.
The cup, Tony Giovanni, means 1 million cash, prestige, notoriety, your name in lights, and it puts you in the record books forever. So the cup will come home with the four horsemen. Well, it's myself and Kevin Sullivan. Tony and Lex, rest assured, we have two teams. Makes the odds in our favor. Now I'm going to talk about you, Horner. I'm going to talk about you, Rock. A lot of people like to come out here, spend their interview time talking about who's got the best abs, who's got the best toys, who's got the most toys, the most cars, fur coats, jewelry. I'm going to talk about an issue, Rock. You see, what you've done, you've turned your back on the horsemen. You've turned your back on your family, not us. You're dragging Jim Horner into it now. Horner, you're a grown man. You make your own decisions. But he's never stopped to think, Horner. You've turned your back on your partner, Brad Armstrong. Do you think Ollie's real popular around here? No, he's not. He's done a lot of nasty things, too. So, Horner, you're a man without a country. Rock, you're a man without a country. What you've just done, you've just entered Vietnam. You're both in a war you can't win. You never had a chance to win it. So, Rock, let me just explain to you. Anytime there's a family squabble, whether it's over a will, whether it's over whatever the last pork chop on the kitchen table, it's always nastier than if it's two strangers. So, Ollie, this started out, we want to wash our hands of you. Now, it's become domestic trouble. You see, when you brought a ball bat in the ring, it's a criminal offense. If you think your son's proud of you, Ollie, you're sadly mistaken. We're not going to have you arrested. What we're under right now, Rock, what we call horseman law, martial law. It means all things being equal, Rock. It might be at the 7-Eleven, at the mall. Oh, just remember one thing. Let me leave you with one passing thought. If it's not at the Cup or an arena, I know where you live.
Okay, Arn Anderson fans, we'll be right back right after this. Tournament, the team of Arn Anderson teaming up with Kevin Sullivan, as you heard from James J. Dillon. Let's listen to this interview right now from Kevin Sullivan.
Baltimore, Maryland, the biggest spectacle in the history of wrestling, the Jim Crockett Senior Memorial Cup, $1 million. Everybody out there, think of that again. $1 million. I'm going to let Arn Anderson know something. Arn, the fire is right here, brother. You don't have to worry about me not having fire, because $1 million, I'd do anything for $1 million. You see, it comes a time when your life, one time, you can grasp onto the star and take it to the heavens. For $1 million, AA, you took the right choice. You don't have to worry about your goofy brother in your corner. For $1 million, I can retire. I can do anything I want. Party with anybody in the world. But in Baltimore, I got to get it done first. I'll do anything for $1 million.
I love
disturbing.
I love disturbing. Those old promos from Kevin Sullivan when he's playing up the devil, but. Man, I love the promo that we heard from Ole. Now he's got a weapon and he's got somebody else on his side. And hey, that means he's game for the next attack from you as well. What'd you think of y'all's promos?
Well, the story, if you think about it for just a minute, you know, Ole didn't make any friends when he was with the horsemen. We didn't have any friends in that locker room. It was the five of us, including JJ, against everybody. And I mean, bad guys, good guys, in between, you name it. We didn't make any friends. We stepped on a lot of toes. So for him to get a partner was going to be a difficult task. There were a lot of people do not like Ole Anderson. For Horner to step up was a direct elevation of his career immediately. And it was one of those things that you went, wow, that's not the guy that I thought would step up, but his reasoning was sound. I'm sure that, you know, at some point in time in the past, Ole had done something, being the boss, booker, owner, whatever it may be. He may have gave Tim a break, and that was his way of paying him back. And to have a performer like Tim Horner in that mix just made for just interesting, very interesting.
Let's talk about the Kevin Sullivan pairing. You know, we just realized that Kevin Sullivan was going to be your partner last week. Now this week, of course, we hear from Kevin Sullivan again. You guys are going to be teaming up. Had you ever done any sort of tag work or been in the ring with Kevin at all prior to this? How does that pairing come to be? I know it's a special event and it's the Crockett Cup, but just talk me through how in the world this tag team comes together and what your experience was with him at that point.
Well, I think I might, and I was trying to remember back my first pass through when I was partners with Matt Bourne, and then Matt got fired and I was kind of in limbo for a while. The first time through Georgia Championship Wrestling, I want to say I was partners with Kevin against Buzz Sawyer and Brett, maybe just at like a few live events. I'm not positive, but I think that happened. I think one of them was maybe Athens, Georgia, for some reason that sticks out. As nuts as Kevin Sullivan comes across, once the bell rings, it goes up another level. You don't know what to expect. You do know the guy don't mind. He ain't scared. He don't mind getting in there fighting. So I figured I had a relatively decent shot at it. If he just went off the deep end and kept one of the guys in each match occupied, I could figure out a way to win and advance us, you know. And hey, Kevin Sullivan was positioned pretty good at that point in time, and very solid, tough guy. Don't mind biting your nose off if that's what it takes. So I went into that tournament really with more questions than answers.
Of course, some of those questions will be answered, but first we got to start making towns later that night. April 4th, we're going to make our very first shot at the Boston Garden. This is the debut at the Boston Garden for Jim Crockett Promotions. And there's 11,000 people here. You're going to be on 4th. Once again, working with Ole. The main event that night is going to be Dusty and Big Bubba in a lights out steel cage match. Right before that, the NWA World Title's on the line with Barry Windham challenging Ric Flair for 23 minutes. And we had US Champ versus TV Champ, Nikita versus Tully. Right before that, the Road Warriors working with the Rock and Roll Express, or I'm sorry, the Midnight Express, which is now Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane. The Rock and Rolls are working against Ivan Koloff and Vladimir Petrov. So it's a big time card. I mean, loaded top to bottom, but Boston is historically a WWF stronghold. This is your debut here, and 11,000 people turn up. This has to make you feel good coming out in such a historic arena, knowing we're in enemy territory and doing damn well.
The only advantage we had is great sports cities like that. I mean, a lot of tough guys in Boston, a lot of tough teams across the board, you know, through the years. And for some reason, cities like that gravitated towards the Horsemen because, hey,
they were cool. Dudes. Yeah.
We're tough dudes. We're one of them. And they got it. And, you know, the response to us was probably split, probably maybe 60-40, yay boo. But the fact is they did respect the fact that we were going to bring them some violence. And that card that you just ran through, I'm sitting there listening to that. Hell, that could have been a Starcade card.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that could have main evented, you know, any pay-per-view anywhere in the world. The next day you're back in Atlanta doing more TV tapings. These are ultimately going to air on the 11th. You'll beat Zane Smith here. And then on the 5th, you're staying in Atlanta. That night, you're going to do a show at the Omni, 4,000 folks. You'll be third from the top working with Dusty. Again, I know we've said it a few times, but it probably never got old for you working at the Omni against the American Dream, did it?
No, God, no. You know, you can just tell as we run through the chronological order that the Omni was being run too much.
Yeah.
You know, you look back on it now. At that time, I was selfish. You know, it was my fantasy arena. It was my Madison Square Garden, and to wrestle Dusty Rhodes there, hell, I would have probably did it every day a week, every day of the week for a month before I said anything negative about it. It just the Holy Grail.
Spartanburg, South Carolina is going to host you guys on April 7th for a TV taping. There's a pretty cool happening here where Brad Armstrong is going to defeat Tully Blanchard by reverse decision. So Blanchard initially wins the match by pinfall after 13 minutes, but it's because Lex Luger interferes as referee Tommy Young is knocked down on the floor and hits an elbow drop as Armstrong has Blanchard covered after a missile drop kick. A few minutes later, a new referee, Sonny Fargo, awards the match to Armstrong instead. And of course, after the bout, Luger, Blanchard, and Arn all triple team Armstrong until Tim Horner and Ole Anderson make the save. This is all happening on the syndicated TV shows, whether it's worldwide or pro. I want to do a localized promo with you and Arn, or you and JJ rather, from worldwide. This is April 4th, 1987. So we'll hear from yourself and JJ and then Ole, a couple of old school arena style promos. Let's take a listen from worldwide. April 4th, 1987.
All right, Tony here with us now, Arn Anderson, J.J. Dillon, J.J. Tim Horner said that the four horsemen stepped into the hornet's nest, and believe me, they did, with Horner and Big Ole.
Well, Ole Anderson, it was almost like a twist of fate. The same baseball bat that Ole Anderson crashed across the wrist of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, putting it in a cast, is the same baseball bat he came in the ring and crashed across the ribs and across the back and into the stomach of the four horsemen. And what I don't understand is and how Jimmy Crockett, president of Jim Crockett Promotions, could come out here in good conscience and talk with disdain about the incident in which the bat was struck across the wrist of Ole Anderson on Dusty Rhodes, and yet he blindly overlooks the incident which the same man with the same bat came in the ring and attacked the four horsemen. Explain that to me. I think what's happened, Arn, is that once again, the four horsemen are going to have to deal with this thing ourselves.
What it is, Bob Connell, a lot of people come out here and they take their interview time to talk about who's got the sharpest abs, who's got the nicest clothes, the nicest cars. Let's do something different. Let's talk wrestling. I don't care who's got the most toys. Let's talk about an issue. The issue is, Ole Anderson, what people just saw on television was not only immoral, it was a criminal act. You think your son would enjoy and look up to you for what you did? Well, Tim Horner, what you've done, you don't realize, my man, as you've just alienated yourself from your partner, Brad Armstrong. You see, Ole Anderson is not popular. People still remember what he did. Ole, you're beside yourself. Now, Horner, you're beside yourself. Two vigilantes attacking the four horsemen. What you've done, you've just stepped into Vietnam. You're in a war you can never, ever hope to win. Because you see, the four horsemen govern professional wrestling. You don't believe it? Leave us off the card. See how many empty seats are in the building. We dictate policy through our power, through our prowess, through our drawing ability. So, Russ, you want to jump on us? You want to take Tim Horner down with you? Just remember, Russ, this is all-out war. We're not family in a war. We're just adversaries. Remember that, Rock.
All right, fans. Now back to the ring. Fans, we're here with Ole Anderson. Ole, careful with that. I've seen what you can do with that. Your recent encounter with a horseman turned into a riot with that bat.
Well, I'll tell you what. I told a lot of people, said, oh, you haven't got anybody that's a friend of yours. Well, I found out I got a lot of friends. Here's one of my friends right here, and I got a lot of friends right out here. I got a lot of people that want to see somebody take care of the four horsemen. And I tell you what, if there's anybody that can take care of the four horsemen, you're looking at the guy right here that'll get the job done.
I think you're right, too. Let's show the fans what we're talking about. Let's show exactly what you did.
This man looks better and better on TV. We're talking about White Lightning, Tim Horner. Tim, good to see you.
You know, Tony, it seems the horsemen think they've got everything figured out. You know, they're going to push Ole on the side, and they're going to say, well, we're going to go on without our business. We're wrong, because you ain't going on without your business, because what you've done is you stirred up a hornet's nest. And let me tell you something. When you mess with a hornet's nest, you're going to get stung. Exactly. Now, let me say something about Ole Anderson.
1 minute, big boy.
Just one second.
Don't put your hands on me. You come out here like big time White Lady. You're a great wrestler. You do a lot of great things. Do not stick your nose into horseman business. Don't come out here and say, oh, Ole, I'll be there to help you, because you got nothing to do and you got nothing to be here.
Let me tell you something. I'm not going to stand out here and be set up like you set up everybody else. If you want some of me, you've got that title. Yeah. You can get in the ring right now. If you feel froggy, buddy, you just hop on.
I got plenty of frogginess. Hold it.
Well, there they go. Horner's
issue the challenge. He's coming your way, Bob Caudill, and over here now, Tully Blanchard taking off his watch, his glasses, and he's on his way to the ring. Bob, here they come.
Oh, Tim Horner in the ring, and Tully Blanchard is coming in his street clothes, taking his shirt off. Outside the ring, going in after Tim Horner. He's got his street shoes on. Look like
a patented dance. Yeah. You see the dance of the Rock. I'm gonna be dancing like that every time I get a chance to go after those guys called the Four Horsemen. And talk about Ole not having any friends. Well, take a look at one of my friends right over here.
That's right, Ole. You know exactly how I feel. Anytime you want me, I'm gonna be there, because if you want a piece of the Rock, you don't have to go to Prudential. You can get it right here. Hey. It ain't gonna be four on one anymore. It'll be 4-on-2.
No. It's gonna be 4-on-3. Timmy, Ole, and this bat coming for the Horsemen.
All right, fans, to the ring.
The bat, man. He means serious business, and he's carrying it to all of his promos, and it's definitely selling some tickets at the live events. And that's the goal, is it not?
Absolutely. He's a fiery babyface, isn't he? Who'd have thunk it? Who would have thunk it? Yeah, that was it's good stuff. And he's feeling it, and the crowd was going absolute apeshit when he's doing that running in place gimmick. Outstanding.
When you think about Ole Anderson, I always think of him as a heel, but sometimes they say what's the old, cliche about a heel and a baby face, the best baby face, in regards to the idea being that in order to really hate someone, you first had to love them, or vice versa. And I think that relationship exists with Ole, because most of these fans have seen Ole on their TV every single week for years and years and years. And by and large, he's been a bad guy. But now that he's been wronged and he's defending his own son, it's easy, because they're already so familiar with him, to just fall in love with the babyface version, right?
Well, I'll give you my analogy, and this is just a rule of thumb. If you're a heel, you switch babyface, guess what? You don't change anything.
Yeah.
Do everything exactly what brought you there. The only difference is now you're doing it to the bad guys, and that's what makes you a babyface. But you don't change your style. You don't change your promo. You don't change anything. You just change opponents.
Well, you're going to have a variety of opponents, because you're showing up in Baltimore for day one of the Crockett Cup on April 10th. 9,300 fans are here. And in the second round, Bob and Brad Armstrong are going to get a win over Arn and Kevin Sullivan. So you guys are in and out after some fun promos. What do you remember about this match here at the 87 Crockett Cup, where the Armstrongs pick up a win?
Well, I wasn't planning on getting knocked out of the tournament that quick. That's for sure. I found out the comfortable part of having partners that I knew 100%, that I knew exactly what they were thinking. I could look in their eyes and know what they had in mind. Kevin was, an island unto himself. He was all over the place, and he was trying to win that money. Who wouldn't want to win money like that? I mean, the prize. It was, my God, $1 million? Are you kidding me? The thing is, I was used to, Tully and I were a synchronized unit. Ole and I were a synchronized unit. Rick and I were a synchronized unit when it came down to tag matches. On this particular night, it was just something was off, something was different, and maybe that was the idea, divide and conquer.
Well, you are going to be divided from at least Ole Anderson. He's going to main event here on the 10th with Big Bubba. It's the last man standing steel cage match. And Ole gets the win. But then day two of the Crockett Cup happens. And of course, in the finals, it comes down to Dusty and Nikita against Blanchard and Luger. And what do you know? Dusty and Nikita win. Of course, in 86, the Road Warriors, or as Mrs. Crockett called them, the Road Runners, were the winners. So the first time we have them in New Orleans, the second time we had them in Baltimore. Did you have a preference? Which Crockett Cup experience did you enjoy more, just as the performer, as the guy who's got to be in the buildings? Was it the Superdome or was it the Baltimore Arena?
I wanted to be wherever the Road Runners were.
Sure.
I just think Baltimore was just one of those, you know, and we put them over all the time. I do. I know. I compliment those fans every chance I get. They were on a par with anybody else anywhere in the country. You know, we talk about Greensboro and we talk about, you know, Charlotte and we talk about Atlanta and all the great cities. Baltimore was one as well. New Orleans was, you know, the Superdome has this mantra and it has this mystique all over it, but it's just too big. You know, it's hard to sell, what'll it hold? 80,000 people for football?
I'm not sure, but it's a bunch.
But even if you rope half of it off, you know, and you curtain it off, it's still an enormous building. And all the sound goes straight up. It's just a different environment. It's not that close, tight. You know, you can just feel everything because it's just so big.
Well, and so was Worldwide. Worldwide was the big syndicated show. And we've got some clips here from the episode that aired on the 11th. We'll hear J.J. Dillon talking about Ole Anderson here on April 11th, 1987. Let's take a listen.
Here's the world television champion, Telly Blanchard, James J. Dillon.
You know, Bob Caldwell, I was out here earlier at this program, and I had something that was on my mind, and I said, no, I'm not going to mention. I got wrapped up with what was happening at the moment, but it's burning inside of me, and something needs to be said. Now, Jimmy Crockett, you come out here, and you maybe to be commended for being so righteous, talking about cleaning up some incidents that have happened in the world of professional wrestling that maybe shouldn't have happened. But I think here we've also got an indication that we're looking at a double standard. Because Ole Anderson comes out here with that same Louisville slugger and racks it across the ribs of the world television champion, across the back of the world heavyweight champion, at Pepper and Arn Anderson and Lex Luger, and apparently you're turning a blind eye. Well, Jimmy Crockett, if you want to talk about sanctions on people, let's talk about Ole Anderson too. Open your eyes. Now, Ole, you already are getting a few people confused. You got Tim Horner coming out here. Now you got Brad Armstrong. And I don't know what kind of goods you're selling them, but I see him stacking hands up, Tully. And as we often know, you can imitate something, but you can never duplicate it. Because the Four Horsemen is more than four great athletes in the ring at the same time. It's a lifestyle that no Tim Horner, no Brad Armstrong, and certainly no Ole Anderson is ever going to live up to. Because you couldn't live up to it in the past. You got your priorities mixed up. You turned your back on us. And if you think you're going to form your own organization, who are you kidding? The Four Horsemen are forever.
All right, fans, see you next week. And until then, so long for now.
Man, major separation here with Ole and the Horsemen. I mean, that story is just going to continue to tell itself, really, for a long, long time. In hindsight, do you think the timing was right for the split and the change to Lex Luger, or was that really just dictated by it was always going to be Ole's call as to win just based on home stuff?
Yeah. I mean, he had told us up front, you know, I didn't believe him, especially when things flamed up the way they did and business was on fire. I mean, who could walk away from that? But, you know, little did I know, Ole had already made several fortunes and had several fortunes put up and hid and invested. And it wasn't about money with him at that time. It was going to see his kid. And I didn't understand it because, you know, I had a little one, but it was a little one. I was more concerned with him toddling his way around the house and is he going to fall and hit his head on something. I wasn't worried about, you know, all the things that Ole had to worry about at that particular time. And he said, hey, when it comes time, I'm gone. Damn if he wasn't.
Well, he is gone, but before he's out of here, we're going to see him in Tim Horner's corner, and we're, that rhymed, Tim Horner's corner. That should have been a segment, like a Brother Love Show segment.
It's got a nice ring to it, Conrad.
It does.
Back here with a member of the Four Horsemen, this man, Arn Anderson.
Tony Schiavone, the one thing I've always prided myself on ever since we first made eye contact is I don't shoot a lot of bull. When I come out here and I spend time, anybody wants to price the quality of time on this TV station, you don't come out here and talk about women. You don't come out here and talk about your toys. I'm going to change all of the scenario for one brief time. I want to talk about wrestling. You see, there's a match coming up in Daytona Beach that's going to set all, what I might say, attendance records. It's going to be a gut check. What it's going to do is be a measuring stick for tag team equivalency. I'm talking about the Road Warriors, the American Dream, and Nikita Koloff all on one team. If you've ever pictured that into your realm, you think, what team could you put against that team that would have any chance? You see, Dusty Rhodes has been the very best for as long as I can remember. He's took Nikita Koloff and molded him into a super champion. You look at the Road Warriors, they're the most awesome force in professional wrestling. You figure there's no four guys you can stick together that would even pose a chance. But you got to remember one thing, Tony Schiavone. We're the Four Horsemen are not four guys that are stuck together. We're four guys that train together, live together, travel together. And I'm going to use one key word, Daytona Beach. When it's all said and done, you're going to remember this word. We sacrifice together. You see, ego doesn't enter into what we do. We don't worry about whatever you might want to call it. We don't care about our ego getting tarnished, our good looks getting tarnished. When we get in a match, I'll sacrifice, Luger will sacrifice, Tully will sacrifice, and so will the World Heavyweight Champion, because you see, all we care about is getting our power raised. You want to be a horseman, it's not because all these people say, oh, you're a horseman. It's not because you got a satin jacket that says horseman on the back. The only way you can claim to be a horseman is to get out there, and when it gets tough, you suck it up. You get in that gym on the days you don't want to get in the gym. You pull that wrestling boot on when you can't pull it on because you got an ankle this big. What it's called a gut check. It's called a measuring stick. So Daytona Beach, you want to get a ticket, you want to pull up a seat, you want to pay, you want to get your money's worth, you're going to get your money's worth, because I assure you, the Four Horsemen will show you nothing but tag team excess. Rhodes, Road Warriors, Akita, pull on your boots, tie them up real tight. We're coming for you in Daytona.
Arn Anderson and fans, back to the ring.
Man, that was a fun promo. I love when you're all hot and bothered and fit to be tied. That was good stuff right there, dude.
I stumbled over a few words. I hate to see that. I hate it when I do that. That means I am just, it's up at a level about one digit too high.
So after that, you know, you're hopping a plane, getting down to Charleston, South Carolina. We got the Road Runners teaming with Nikita Koloff to take on Ric Flair, Lex Luger, and Arn Anderson. 3,500 fans are here, but that's big time six man action right there. But the Road Warriors and Nikita Koloff, buddy, it feels like y'all were shot out of a cannon that day, was it not?
Too much muscle, too much strength, too much size. Plus, they're all trying to outdo each other. That's just a bad combination if you're on the other team.
Thankfully, you get a night off the next day, April 13th in Greenville, South Carolina. It'll be Arn and Lex taking on Baron Von Raschke and Tim Horner. And they were doing a television taping in Salisbury, North Carolina. Worldwide is going to be taping here, and Pro, where we would see you beat an unknown with a ghost, or not a Ghostbuster. That's what I'm wearing. You were hitting people with the Gourd Buster on the 15th. You're down in Jacksonville, Florida. And then when it comes time for the 16th, you're back in Athens, sort of a second home away from home for an old bulldog like you. Brad Armstrong and yourself in singles action, third from the top. The live event compared to a television show, totally different feel then and now. Even in more modern years, Eric and I talked about this the other day. I would prefer to go to a live event. He would prefer to go to a television event. What did you prefer as a performer? The television matches of the Raws and Nitros, or the live event where you could ham it up with the local crowd?
Well, live events were, there were like, if you had, let's just say you had eight matches, You had eight short stories with the beginning, middle, and end to each one. TV was fragments of your story. But you also knew, if you were smart enough, that that's your advertisement. That's how you make your money. That's how you get over, is being on television. And it was just one of those things that you embraced it, and you used your TV time to the best of your ability, because ultimately that was what was going to pay the bills.
I encourage everybody, if you have an opportunity to go to a live event and you have little kids, boy, you should take them to that. It'll be cool to see the glitz and the glamour of the TV cameras and the lighting rigs and the pyro and all that jazz. But man, your kid will have a blast at a live event. It's wrestling like they've never seen it. Way more fun. April 7th.
Matches are much better, not to interrupt you, I'm sorry. Because the story, you know, nobody is under the gun. You know, they don't say, going through the curtain, okay, you got 3 minutes now.
Yeah.
You know, every match has enough time to let you get to know the characters and the people in the match. And if you didn't know already, it gives you a chance to catch up.
Richmond, Virginia, on the 17th, you got 5,000 folks here, and you're in the main event. It's Dusty and the Road Warriors taking on Flair, Arn, and Lex Luger. And then we're back to TBS. We're going to be doing a matinee television taping here, and you're going to pin the Italian Stallion. After the bout, David Crockett is going to do a ringside interview with you, where you're going to cut a promo on Barry Windham, saying that you're the number one contender. You've beaten up people up north, down south, and out west. And you're here in Jim Crockett because you wanted to face the best. And you're going to take exception to Windham thinking that he's better than him. I like that, you know, whereas a few weeks ago, it felt like you had your sights set on a single title and you were coming for Nikita. Now you've pivoted to Barry Windham, who certainly has had a hot issue with Ric Flair for a long time. This keeps him engaged with the Horseman feud, does it not?
Yeah, it keeps, you know, his opponent is already established. My opponent is already established. It's, you know, Barry Windham was just so good, and his reputation preceded him. And to be in an angle with him, we're doing so much television and we're running so many shows at this particular time. You know, I expect any moment for you to say, okay, you were wrestling Manny Fernandez again.
Yeah.
Because you could just skip around. And once the characters and once the guys were established, you could skip around and wrestle virtually anybody. Brad Armstrong tonight somewhere, Dusty the next night. And that was the beauty of getting over on television.
April 22nd, it happened. Main event, new opponents. Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson are taking on Arn Anderson and Lex Luger. Boy, you talk about three tag team specialists and a guy just trying to get his feet underneath him. But I'm sure it was a good match. I mean, you've got all the necessary artillery there. 2 days later, you're back in Chicago, the UIC Pavilion. Nikita and the Road Warriors teaming up to take on Tully, Lex, and Arn. The main event is Ric Flair and Dusty. You guys always brought it for these Chicago cards. It feels like if you were going to try some things out, test some things out, maybe that happens in a spot show somewhere. But hey, if we're going to Boston, if we're going to Chicago, if we're going to LA, we're bringing out the big guns, are we not?
Well, there was one hitch to that. The Road Warriors, who always claimed to be from Chicago, you think they were wired to be in any of these other cities? See them coming through the curtain in Chicago, their home, quote, hometown. Oh my God, what a beating. It was just amplified up to another level.
And right after that, you're in Philadelphia, because why not? We're already up in this direction. Ole Anderson and Arn Anderson go 6 minutes, and then there's a low blow, and that's all she wrote. Ole gets the pin. I love that. You know, this is a good guy, quote unquote, a baby face, quote unquote, pinning a heel with a low blow, but it's a hot issue. And I guess, it's all fair when it's blood like this, is it not?
Well, back to our conversation a little bit earlier in today's show, that's what Ole Anderson would do if he got in trouble. And just because now he's a quote baby face, you still do exactly what you would do. You just do it to the bad guys. And it was not looked at being anything, you know, below board or low brow. It was just, it fit. He just beat me to it, I'm sure.
You're going to be doing a shot for Championship Wrestling from Florida in Daytona on the 26th. All the big stars are there, including Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, the Road Warriors, yourself, Lex Luger, Tully Blanchard. It feels like the partnership in 86 and certainly 87 with Jim Crockett and Florida is thriving. Is that really primarily because of Dusty's relationship with the Grahams?
I would think so.
Yeah.
And NWA still had partnership a bunch, you know, amongst the, you know, the people that were members of that. And this is getting a long time. I would say probably spring break was somewhere in there.
Yeah. The last month or so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I bet, you know, I'm not sure, but that sounds like one of those shows where we would have brought the family and let them enjoy a little pool time while we were working. I would almost say that's correct. Right around, what is that exact date?
April 26th. They would have been hanging out without you very long, because the day before you were in Philadelphia and the next day you're in Phoenix, which is something I wanted to bring up. Think about that. You're going Philadelphia down to Daytona Beach and then all the way over to Phoenix, Arizona. My goodness. Who's routing this stuff? Are you guys just throwing darts at a dartboard? That's what, Bruce jokes that the WWF used to do in the late 80s.
Sounds like Ray Charles was throwing darts at a map.
Seriously.
Imagine. Yeah, well, that, and you just telling me the before and the after of the towns before Daytona, I can assure you, we probably, to make a trip that far, we probably left after the Daytona show and flew out to Phoenix that night. So we were sitting on an airplane for probably 4 hours.
Phoenix, Arizona sees Ron Garvin and Arn Anderson, fourth from the top. Then you're in El Paso, Texas the next day. I'm telling you, the zigzag continues. And then you get a day off, a rare day off, or so it seems, on the 29th. And then on the 30th, you're in the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center, which we just talked about last month. You're back here for Jim Crockett. This time you're working second from the second match of the card. Ole has Tim Horner with him. You have Lex Luger with you. And Flair and Dusty Rhodes are in the main event. And the very next day, back over to the Omni. You're teaming with Tully to take on Ole and Tim Horner. A TV taping would get us started on May 2nd, and we're off to the races. April of 87, man, if you blink, you missed it. But a lot of heavy travel, if you're paying attention. Daytona to Phoenix to Texas to Birmingham. Dude, you were wearing out those Sky Miles back then, were you not?
Yeah, and you couldn't have done it without the opportunity of having a private aircraft. That's the only way they could do that, because, you know, they're not after a show at night, 11:30 at night, you don't have any commercial flights flying, and you couldn't, you know, the reason I say after the Daytona show, we probably went to Phoenix, you're not probably going to spend the night there. Any number of things can happen, weather-related, you know, the plane could have a glitch, whatever the deal was, you would have to go that night. And that's a pretty good trip from Daytona. I would say from there to Phoenix is probably about 4 hours, but you got to have the luxury of having those private aircraft. And when you're, you know, you're drawing and you're running, even the days that we weren't, you know, doing super, super business, you know, I don't know what 4,000 people translated to in dollars, but you had enough money to operate those private planes, and that was making everything else possible.
Well, and you guys make it possible. We appreciate you tuning in every week, hitting the subscribe button, telling your friends about us, and we hope that you'll check us out over on adfreeshows.com, because man, we sure are having a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun breaking down 1987. We'll keep the train on the tracks next week as we talk about all things from May of 87. But you do a little piece of bonus action every single month. And of course, this month you watched yourself and Dustin on WCW Saturday Night. Talk about an old school classic that hit you right in the feels. Did it not?
He was so good. Even then he was just a rookie, and he just, whoever named him the Natural, I would imagine probably his dad, because he was just really good. And he was a lot like Barry Windham. The comparisons are, I mean, Dustin would go to the gym, but he was not a gym guy. He wasn't a body guy, but hey, what is he? 6'6", 6'5", 6'6". same body type as Barry, strong, just natural strength, and he moved smooth as silk in the ring. I mean, he had it all from the very beginning, and if you watched him wrestle as late as a couple, 3 weeks ago, the guy is just, he can still go, man, big time.
Well, and we hope you guys go check it out at adfreeshows.com. You get all these shows early and ad free, and you never know what we have up our sleeve. Just last week, we had the legendary 30th anniversary of the 1992 Royal Rumble as a watch along, and the GOAT, Ric Flair, joined us, and you got to ask Ric Flair anything you wanted and watch his most famous WWF match with him. And it was a happening, and it only happened at adfreeshows.com. Lots of fun stuff for you to check out. Go check it out at adfreeshows.com. Until next week, he is at the Arn Show. I am at Hey Hey, it's Conrad, and we'll see you back here talking all things May 1987 on Arn.